Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Glorious Rugby Podcast. I'm your co-host, John Fitzpatrick. And joining me is my fellow co-host, Alistair Kirschpool, AKP. You were at the Week 3 home opener for Old Glory DC. Unfortunately, a draw, so we've got a lot to talk about. But AKP, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It was fun on Saturday. I had such a good time. And did some tailgating in the parking lot beforehand. Sort of failed to make some burgers, but successfully made hot dogs, so that was good enough for me. And yeah, it was great weather for rugby, sunny, 65. It was really perfect. And then it's just great to watch rugby in person again. It's one of those things that there's just nothing like being at a rugby game and getting to see it in person, and it's just such a different experience to on TV. And not that it was a bad experience on TV, this match, either. The, going back and rewatching it, the angles are great. The field looks amazing. It was really just all around a pretty good experience.
Yeah, outside of the outcome, which, again, we'll talk about in a little bit, opportunities there to win didn't happen. But, I really liked the interviews that you did post-game with the players, the coaches, and Paul Sheehy. Everyone was raving about the venue. The simple fact that they're just playing on grass. Our boy Willie T mentioning how much he likes playing on grass. It looked good on TV, and I'm excited to get out there this season. Quick question. Tailgating, allowed-ish?
You're not allowed to open flames.
Okay.
And you're not allowed alcohol. Or you're not allowed to get caught with alcohol. We didn't have anyone come around and check anything, so I'll just leave that the way it is.
Yeah,
no, but I actually used an electric grill, and it was very effective, so no open flames.
Wow, that's fancy. Hey, awesome. Can't wait to hear more about it. Let's jump right into a preview of the episode. We're going to break down Week 3, the tie against Chicago, and then, of course, Week 4, another home match, San Diego Legion coming across the country, and kind of an important one for both sides here as we start to shift away from, okay, we've played a few games here now, let's start to really figure out what our identity is. And I got to say, I think the San Diego Legion, probably not the start that they were expecting. They're sitting fourth right now in the Western Conference. They're a point behind the Dallas Jackals. I love that, but we'll get into that in just a second. Hey, KP, the Week 3 lineup came out. And what did you think?
I thought it was mostly not surprising for once, which was, it's been unusual. And partly that's because we had a bunch of players back. I mean, Axel Muller, Damien Hoyland, their first matches of the season, and Perry Humphreys back from injury. So the back line looked way more normal than, way more like what we were expecting in preseason. And then the forwards basically unchanged from the last few weeks. The only difference, I think, was Joe Rafter coming in for Quinton Newcomer, who was on the unavailable list.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw it, to me, it felt like, okay, pieces are coming back into place. It seemed like, and it felt like, our strongest lineup yet. I think we had a little more, we'll talk about Axel in just a moment. Great MLR debut, great debut for Old Glory DC. Damien Hoyland back there gaining a bunch of meters. I feel like strongest lineup yet with still more to come. But I've got to ask, AKP, you're the front row guru here, apparently. You've brought this up a number of times the last few weeks. Concerns about the front row. Share those concerns again, man. Like, what's making you nervous about the front row?
So it's just down to the number of players. So you need front rowers are a particular sort of player. You have to be qualified to play in the front row. You have to be, I don't quite remember how you become qualified, but basically you've got to have experience and be able to play at that level, and you can't just put anyone in the front row. It has to be something that you train for and train at that position, because there's a huge amount of pressure, like literal pressure, on those guys' bodies at the front. You've got two packs that are close to half a ton each, and they're pushing against each other. There's a lot of force going through those guys' bodies. So for safety reasons, you have to be qualified to be in the front row. And you have to have a full set of qualified front rowers on the bench too. So that means there have to be 6 qualified front rowers in every lineup. Now, with we didn't have that many front rowers to start the season. There were originally only going to be 8 front rowers on the roster. So 8 of them, 6 of them in every lineup. That doesn't leave a lot of margin for error. Well, and then Kevin Brough went and got injured in preseason, and we were down to 7. We brought back Quinton Newcomer, who wasn't on the original, in the original roster announcement, to cover for injury. And but then, you know, now you've got Quinton Newcomer unavailable, you've got Facundo Gaddis out, and suddenly we're down to putting literally every front rower we have available to us on the field. Now, I will offer a little caveat to that. You know, that is incredibly concerning, but I actually do have some insight into why Quinton Newcomer might be unavailable, because he was sitting a few rows in front of me at the game.
Oh,
and holding a very, very young child. So it could be that it is family concerns rather than injury or something like that keeping Quinton out. And so I'm sure if the team was in an incredibly desperate place where they were going to have to forfeit a game because they didn't have enough front rowers, I'm sure something could be arranged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honey, I'm sorry. First of all, congrats to the Newcomer family for welcoming a newcomer to the Newcomer family. I'm sorry. That's so bad. But yeah, I'm sure he could have been like, honey, can you hold our child? I need to play for about 60 minutes here.
Yeah. Well, or even if they just put him on the bench to fill in the numbers. But also, I mean, honestly, though, I don't have any details on that circumstance. I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. Anything there. I haven't double checked this with the team or with Newcomer himself. It's just, you know, an observation, but it would make sense too why he then wasn't on the roster originally, because presumably he knew that this event was coming and that eventually he would be occupied with family and wasn't willing to commit to Old Glory for this full season. So yeah, so our concerns may be a little excessive right now, but it's still long-term a situation where I really wish they would bring in someone, anyone to be around just in case, because injuries happen and people go down and it seems we're really flying close to the sun with this, really, you know, taking the corner tight there, and we might hit the grass and spin out and crash into a wall.
Yeah, I remember how that tale ends. I think Icarus, he kept his wings burn or something like that. So, not good. Hopefully that tale doesn't end that way for us. But so AKB, that's certainly a question mark and something to keep track of going forward. But week after week now, AKP, I think you know where I'm going with this. The biggest question mark, and I think at this point we need to talk about it a little bit more because we got some inside stuff, and I don't think there's too much we can reveal. But I guess the biggest question mark is, where in the world is Danny Tusitala, right? If you're a Carmen San Diego fan, where's Danny Tusitala? AKP, what is going on here? Should we be concerned?
I mean, it doesn't seem to be anything to do with injury. It doesn't seem to be anything to do with unavailability at this point. You know, it's between him and the coaching staff why he's not playing. And, I mean, I will say that, you know, we've had some excellent play from Ethan McVay and Connor Buckley. McVee? Is his name actually McVee? Because that's what the commentators were saying in the match. I should double check this sometime, but I'm going to keep saying McVay until I hear different, because it's in my brain now. But, you know, so we've seen great play from the other scrum halves, and so I don't think there has been a huge pressure to put Danny in the game. There hasn't been an overwhelming need, but it's difficult to say. No one's been willing to say anything specific about that situation, or, you know, other than the he was late to camp line. I've yet to hear any clear reason that he's not in the lineup or not being selected. But you've got to think that for some reason the coaching staff doesn't want to put him in.
Yeah, I mean, and DC United, Old Glory DC fans and MLR fans in general, you know, it's fair for them to ask the question, just where is Danny Tusitala? Because he is such a high-profile player, because he has appeared in, you know, marketing collateral for the league over the last few years. Because he is such a dynamic player, people are going to continue to question that. And I think it's fair for us to ask, too. And I'm not trying to make a mountain out of a molehill, and I think he answered it very diplomatically. It's between him and the coach, and I'm not trying to blow up anything too big. But at the same time, part of me says, hey, if Danny is getting into shape and we don't need him for the first quarter or so of the season, and again, can we have a sharp, healthy, you know, again, relatively healthy, everyone in rugby seems to play injured, can we have a healthy Danny Tusitala for a stretch run, for a playoff run? That's what I'd rather have. So whatever is going on, and again, we don't know if anything is going on. I'm not trying to speculate, you know, aimlessly, but, you know, I would love to know kind of just what's going on with Danny T, because he has been such a big part of the success of this franchise since its, you know, introduction into MLR, that people are going to ask questions. So,
and I think that's fair. And I think, you know, it's one of those where, you know, I don't want to speculate too much and throw stuff out into the atmosphere and then have it be not correct, or have it be, you know, I don't want to imply things about, you know, but it's, and so it's sort of difficult without more information to say for sure what's going on. All we can say is that for some reason, the coaching staff doesn't want to seem to put him in. He doesn't, like, I haven't heard anything that he's injured. I haven't heard anything that anything's holding him off the field, except that they're just not putting him in the lineups. And like you say, that could be because they want to save him for later in the season, or it could be that they just think McVay and Buckley are better. And it's difficult to say without more information.
Yeah. I mean, and it'd be really critical if our scrum half play at the beginning of the season has been lackluster, but it's been pretty strong.
Yeah.
Weeks 2 and 3, certainly an improvement over week 1. And again, that was just maybe because knocking off some rust. But there hasn't been, I don't feel like the scrum half position right now, manned by Ethan and Connor, has played poorly. I thought they played particularly well. So, you know, there's not necessarily like, oh, we need Danny back. But at the same time, we would like to have him back. I'd at least like to know what is going on. So we'll continue to track that. And I guess we'll have some more answers Thursday afternoon or so when we see, hopefully, the El Glory DC lineup come out against San Diego. AKP. All right, let's move on into the game. Again, beautiful. You were there. It looked fantastic. You know, Old Glory started off the game kind of controlling the ball a little bit, threatening to score. Certainly Jason Robinson, I think missing his first kick, came just a little bit short. I mean, it was right on target, you know. But that's a kick. He probably, you ask him to step up and take it again, he makes it. He probably puts a little something extra into it. Okay, no big deal. Later on in the game, though, AKP, we got to break down this play, because there's been a little bit of back and forth I've seen on some Discord and some Reddit and on rugby Twitter. And we're talking about the red card here to the captain, to Jamison Fanata-Schultz. In real time, when I saw it, right, again, given the camera angles and how quickly things, you couldn't quite see it, but you did see Billy Meeks in the air. But it was a strange play, because it wasn't like he was challenging for a high ball necessarily. It was a ball that had, right, bounced off the ground, was up in the air. And Billy was contesting for it along with Jam, and I forget the other player that was in there from the OGD side. But what were you thinking when you saw the red card come out? What was the crowd's reaction when that red card came out?
Yeah. So the first thing to think about here, obviously, it was obviously a dangerous situation, and it was obvious in the stands immediately. Like, oh, this is not a good situation. This is a dangerous thing has happened here. But it in the stands, it did feel a bit unfair. But then again, it's a partisan crowd. I mean, we were going to boo whatever red card came out. Like, he could have just stuck with a penalty. We probably still wouldn't have been happy. Like, it was... But I went back and I rewatched it. And I've been thinking about it quite a lot since it happened. And I think... First of all, I'm not a huge fan of you know, relitigating all of the referees' decisions and all of that. I think for the most part, MLR games are refereed fairly evenly, not always consistently, not always, you know, sometimes it favors one team more than another, but it's a random part of the game and it's not worth worrying too much about. And the reason that this is different is because this will continue to affect his future potentially. This has the potential for knock-on effects. So it's worth talking about it and figuring out what the right answer is here. But, you know, so you've got the way the referees were viewing it on the field. This is a situation where Billy Meeks jumps to catch a ball. And in general, when a player's in the air, you're not allowed to touch them, really. And certainly you're not allowed to hit them or tackle them or put them in a dangerous situation. You have a duty of care, is usually the way it's phrased, to the player in the air. And part of that is sort of preventative. So you look at Jammy. He was going, at first he was going to try and challenge for the ball, but then it became clear he was not going to get there in time. And so he starts slowing down and sort of slipping into defense mode, like, okay, once Meeks has caught the ball, then I can do something. But he was waiting for Meeks to catch the ball first because he knew he wasn't going to be able to get there in time.
And meanwhile, that decision, by the way, is happening like that.
All of this right. is within the space of of a second and a half. So he doesn't challenge. And, you know, he could have tried and jump and... But this is a circumstance where you see that, you know, usually in this sort of jumping situations, like either you're challenging for the ball, either you're jumping in the air, you're trying to catch it, or you keep back far enough that you're not going to interfere with the players in the air. And at a professional level, we usually expect players to know well enough that they, you know, how the situation could develop, that they are prepared for eventualities like, you know, a player jumping in the air to catch the ball and having a lot of forward momentum. And so, you know, we judge them for their positioning and where they choose to be. And, you know, there's no like, oops, he ran into me, it's accidental. It's like, no, you're a professional. You should know that that's not somewhere you can stand in a jumping for the ball situation. And so that's what the referees on the field and in the TMO decided, is that he should have known that he shouldn't have been there. And so when Meeks jumps into him and flips over and it becomes a dangerous situation, you know, that was Jamma's fault. Now, the key here is that it absolutely was not a normal jumping situation where Jamma should have expected to jump. It's those jumping situations, usually the only times you have players jumping for a ball in a sort of contested area is off of a kick. Or we actually saw an incredibly similar situation with Coy Nelligan and Billy Meeks jumping for the exact same sort of high ball after an overthrown lineout. But that was a situation, that was a completely different sort of jump where they reached their hands above their head. They were both trying, they were jumping because if they didn't, the other player was going to jump and grab the ball before them. And so they were both jumping to grab the ball and it was contested. In this Jamma situation, you have Billy Meeks jumping for a ball that's not contested. He's the only one who can catch that ball. And he doesn't reach up to grab it. He's not jumping because if he doesn't jump, he's not going to catch the ball or someone else is going to catch it first. If he doesn't jump, he's still catching that ball right in his chest, right in the bread basket. There's no reason to jump. Absolutely none. Except that he wants to avoid getting flattened by a Jamma who's standing right there and ready to flatten him as soon as he catches the ball. And he doesn't want to have to kill his momentum at all to prepare for that hit. And that is actually where this whole thing flips against Meeks, is you're actually not allowed to do that. You are not allowed to jump to avoid a tackle. And this was clarified by World Rugby.
Where does it say that?
There, World Rugby Clarification 3-2022. So in 2022, they clarified that you're not allowed to jump to avoid a tackle, you're not allowed to jump over a tackle, and you're not allowed to jump into a tackle. And the exception is if you're jumping to score a try. So, like, you know, if you launch yourself for the corner to get the ball over, that's the only exception.
Could you say Billy wasn't trying to necessarily jump to avoid the tackle, he was jumping to try and get the ball?
But he didn't need to. There was no reason to jump. And it wasn't a, you know, it's one thing if, so for example, if the ball had been so far over his head and traveling over his head, so if he didn't jump, he wasn't going to catch the ball. Then you'd say, yeah, he was just jumping to catch the ball. If he, or if he, like when he had to challenge Coy Coy to catch the ball, like then he was jumping because if he didn't jump, Coy Coy was going to get the ball. But in this case, it landed right on his chest, right in the bread basket, as they say. And it was going to do that whether he jumped or not. He jumped and he caught it in the breadbasket, like, which just means he was correctly positioned to catch that ball regardless. Mm-hmm. It was coming right down into his arms regardless of whether he jumped or not. And so the only reason I can think that he would jump there is because Jammo was there and he didn't want to, you know, get hit as soon as he caught the ball. And that's avoiding a tackle, and that's unfair play. Mm-hmm. And actually, the whole thing should have been a penalty against Meeks, strictly speaking.
Yeah.
And for Jammo, it's really hard to hold against him that this was a dangerous situation when he has no expectation and there is no reasonable reason to expect him to expect a situation for Meeks to jump. It's just not a normal jumping situation. Certainly jumping like that, where Meeks has a ton of forward momentum and decides at the last minute to put himself in the air. You know, Jam is getting himself ready for a defensive situation where he's got to tackle a guy who's about to get the ball. That's normal.
Yep.
That's what you expect Jamma to be doing. That's good rugby play. And then Meeks at the last second decides that he's going to jump for the ball. And there's no reason that Jamma should be expecting him to do that. And so when it becomes a dangerous situation, you know, Jamma's got no ability to make that less dangerous. The only one who makes it dangerous is Meeks unnecessarily jumping for a ball in a time when no one is expecting him to jump for the ball. And that's really what makes it not Jamma's fault, even remotely.
Yeah. And again, 2 points there. Even in that split second when Billy jumps for the ball, and I'm a big fan of Billy Meeks, and they did shake hands afterwards. I think Billy knew that Jamma had no ill intent there, right? So that should be something. And kudos to Billy for shaking his hand too, right? Other players would have been a little more upset. In the moment, the split second that it happened where Jamma realized Billy is jumping, he kind of lands on his back, and he reaches back to try and, like, hold him, not necessarily to tackle him, because he knows he's kind of in the air here. And I feel like there's some mitigation of him, like, not trying to have Billy, because, again, he can't see, right? Because he's now behind him on his back. Make sure that Billy comes down safely. And he landed hard, certainly, because he jumped in the air, maybe when he shouldn't have. Jammer wasn't trying to go in with ill intent there, right? And again, the point of this conversation, just to reiterate, we're not going back to relitigate. The red card happened. But the focus of this discussion is just the knock-on effect, how important all of this is, right? Because we're talking about a guy like Jammer who, in years past, unfortunately, had a little, fair to say, maybe disciplinary issues, right? He had that long suspension. Remember when, I think it was Lucas Rumble, right? It was not the best moment of Jamma's career, and I bet you he'll admit it. And he raised his hand and said, that's not the player I am anymore. The next season, right, last year, I believe, they named him captain. That just goes to show you how much he's changed, how much he's taken on a leadership role. No disciplinary issues whatsoever. But if you look at how MLR, you know, adjudicates or whatever these things, they look back and they say, okay, does he have a record here? And he does. He's got a record because of what's happened in the past. Has he atoned for it? Yes. Has he changed? Yes. I don't want whatever happened in the past to be used against him, particularly in a play like this, right, where he could, right? You're supposed to miss at least one game after a red card. Isn't that so?
It's entirely down to the committee.
Okay. So say at a minimum one game, right? Or maybe it gets rescinded and they say, you know what? Red card rescinded. He's not going to miss any time. But if they don't go that route and they suspend him more than a minimum, what are we looking at here? Could we be potentially looking at a 4, 5, 6 game suspension? And that's the case. That is going to have a huge impact on Jamma and also Old Glory's season heading toward the middle part of the season.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, yeah, Jamma hasn't received really any sort of card in a couple of years. So he really cleaned his act up the last two seasons and really avoided trouble, which is a credit to him after getting Absolutely. Three red cards in sort of 1.5 seasons. So, you know, by the last one was a 10-week suspension because of those previous moments of foul play. And so, you know, you have to. But it's one of those where I would say he's clearly changed. He's clearly learned. And also, especially since this was not a situation where he had any ill intent, like even if we assume that, you know, it was on him somehow that Meeks decided to jump there, you can see that he's clearly just not expecting the jump. He's not doing anything to intentionally put himself in the way or create a dangerous situation. You have to say, this is a rugby accident. You know, it shouldn't be a big deal. And especially, I don't think it would be fair to hold the you know, red cards from 3 years ago against him in this case. Mm-hmm. Like, and especially since he was a younger man then too. He's grown up quite a lot. He's older now. He's clearly more mature. Like you say, he's become the captain of the team. He's clearly taken on a lot of responsibility, and he's shown that he's changed a lot. And so I would be incredibly, I think any sort of suspension, I think anything short of, you know, exonerating him and getting rid of that red card would be something of a miscarriage of justice. But even if they do decide to suspend him, if they suspend him more than a couple, like a week or two, I would be pretty upset. I think that would be a major miscarriage of justice, and I would be pretty angry about that.
Yeah. All right, so something to keep our eye on. We may have some updates by Thursday, or even later this afternoon. We're recording this on Tuesday, so you may hear this on Wednesday, and we'll find out. Maybe we'll try and do a quick little update there. Hey, KP, I want to move on just a little bit more. Maybe this is quick fire here. Robertson, is it fair to say kicking struggles in that game, or is it just maybe new venue, new sight lines?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Yeah. It was, it's like he gets home to the, I mean, it was windy that day, and that stadium does tend to have a fair amount of wind. It's sort of exposed in a slightly odd way, and so it could just be that you know, new stadium, and it was a bit weird for him to kick there, but
I'm just, or it could that just last be
bad
kick.
Luck.
Yeah,
it's, you know,
I'm just thinking that last kick. You know, that last kick seemed well within like his probability of converting it, and it just pushed to his left. And I wonder if that was maybe overcompensating for wind or
It's difficult to say, and all I can say is that I hope he's spent a bunch of time kicking at the stadium in the meantime, and is prepared for this next week. And sometimes it's just bad luck. Sometimes your eye's just not there, and you know, it's unfortunate, but it is the way it is. It's, you know, he's been a good kicker for us for, you know, he was a good kicker when he played for us in 2020 and 2021, and he's been a good kicker to start this year, so I don't have any long-term concerns there, but it was disappointing.
All right, moving on quickly, fullback position, we saw Damian Hoyland.
Yeah,
who had a strong performance.
100 and it was like 130 meters on the ground. Yeah. It was a crazy performance. 134 meters gained. Meters gained, not meters run. Meters gained.
Gained,
which is impressive.
I should have started him in the Fantasy Rutgers League. I did not. Sorry, Damian. I'll do that next time. But so do we have some competition at fullback then? Like, will we see more Damian over Grady? What do you think?
Well, it's a good question because, you know, it was a great starting lineup when they put it out there, Perry Humphreys and Damian Hoyland. But then as soon as we had some troubles clearing our lines well and really winning the kicking battle in the first half, and then Grady comes out and, you know, immediately puts in, you know, just a fantastic, I mean, I think it was a 50-22, you know, or if not, it was just a very good clearance kick, you know, just amazing kicking from the backfield from Grady. So personally, I kind of want to see Grady back there a bit more. And it's worth noting that Perry Humphreys went down early, went out of the game pretty early. That's why Grady was in so early. And so Hoyland sort of bumped out to the wing, where he also did pretty well. And but Humphreys, when he went out, he'd actually been seen, and you can't really see this on the broadcast, but I could see it in the stadium. He sort of was slow to get up and had to have the medic come out a few times before he actually went off the field. So hopefully he's doing okay. Yeah. But if he's not, I think Muller on one wing, Hoyland on the other, and Grady in the backfield is not a bad way to go at all.
Yeah, and we also saw Boney. I think he had a checkup, but he came back on.
Yeah, an HIA, and then must have passed it.
I guess he was. Yeah, it's cleared, so that's good there. And speaking of Axel, breaking news here: Major League Rugby just named Axel Muller Player of the weekend.
I mean, you've
got no wonder. Two tries scored, over 100 meters gained, had nine tackles out there. I mean, what more can you say about Axel's MLR debut?
Yeah, spectacular performance. I mean, it's exactly why we were hyping him up in the offseason, exactly why he was a big news signing. It's because he just has, you know, a crazy amount of talent. And it's not that the players we've had on the wing have been bad so far this season. You know, Shabazz was impressive in his way. Rizzo is a, you know, fun, solid American player. But there's it's a different level with Axel Muller. The amount of extra, you know, oomph he brings to the position is just fantastic to watch.
Absolutely. All right, AKP, last section here of the week three breakdown here. Give me your top one or two, kind of just like biggest observations or takeaways coming out of that match heading into week four against San Diego.
So something that I think was interesting is that we have, with these more experienced back three players back into the lineup, we've got a lot more balance between the forwards and the backs in sort of the way that we're playing. You know, we lost against Nola because the forwards were pretty much evenly matched against Nola, and then the backs were struggling a little bit. And then I think we won against New England because our forwards were significantly better than them. We had a strong edge in the forwards against New England. This week, I don't think we had a huge edge in the forwards. You know, maybe a slight edge in certain places, you know, the lineup, particularly the mall had its moments, the scrum had its moments, but mostly I think we had, you know, a significant uptick in the quality of the backs as well. I think we were a much more complete team this week, and I'd love to see how that goes going forward, because we're not always going to have an advantage in the forwards, and being able to rely on our backs a little when the forwards, you know, don't have like some extra level of superiority over their opposition, when they're fairly evenly matched, if we can rely on our backs to sort of get us over the hump and get us the win anyway, which we nearly did. I mean, you know, but for Jamma dropping the ball literally over the goal line, and but for Robertson, you know, making a couple of kicks that he normally makes, we were so close. And that's part of the point of, you know, the way the game went, just missed opportunities all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. So things we'll look into, you know, for week four as we welcome the San Diego Legion. They come into town. San Diego right now, as we talked about at the start of the show, they're sitting in fourth place right now in the Western Conference. They're a point back of Dallas in third. They're really just 3 points back of first place Houston. They've got two wins, one loss. If you look at the record so far, right, so they opened what with San Diego has beaten, wow, I'm blanking on this right now, but
they started on the road in Seattle and lost.
Yes, yep.
That match. That
yeah,
was
they went
a close
up, they
match.
Went up to Star. Right, good call. Week one, they went up there, almost knocked off Seattle. By the way, like they were punching back. Then they came back in week two and
played Dallas, and I think they beat Dallas. Them. But again, that was a bit of a hairy game. They sort of pulled away at the end there, I think. But it was the Dallas gave them a run for their money.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they just they edged past RFCLA. RFCLA almost got their first win. That was a 19-18 game. So San Diego certainly probably not the way they wanted their season to start. I think a lot of people, myself included, were very high on San Diego, and I think still are. I think this is a team still trying to figure it out. I think they've got some interesting pieces there, but on paper in the preseason, I mean, they look like a team that was primed to come back and challenge for the Shield again. And I think a lot of people were thinking that of the New England Free Jacks too, but you know, I don't know if they're the squad that they were last year, not taking anything away from either of those squads, but taking a look at San Diego, let's just go back in recent history. The last time Old Glory DC played the San Diego Legion, we've got to go all the way back to week 7, 2023. That was April. Old Glory DC went out there, hung with San Diego a little bit. They had like a losing bonus point on track. They were tracking towards a, you know, the four try bonus point. And I think both of them escaped them. They ended up losing 48-26. I don't know if they ended up getting the the 4-try bonus point against San Diego. I could be wrong. I think they came up like just short of that. I'd have to go back and double check here. I don't anticipate that happening this year, AKP. They did get one. They did get one bonus point. They got 4 tries. Your boy John Lefrev dotted down in the 70th minute to get that for us. So that was important there. But AKP, if you look at the San Diego Legion squad going into 2024, and there's some changes in the offseason, right? Like, they welcome back Ma Nanu. That's great. You know, I think Ma Nanu's already dotted down this year. They've welcomed a few new pieces. USA international lock Greg Peterson, who's been playing pretty well for them. You know, fullback Chris Mattina, he's been capped by the Eagles recently. He's come, you know. Matt Gateau, that was the big announcement. We have yet to see Gateau. There's no way he plays against Old Glory, right? Like, there's no way his first game with the San Diego Legion is a road game in D.C., right? Like, San Diego would introduce him in his first game back in MLR in front of a San Diego crowd, right?
You'd have to expect so, but yeah. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. But AKP, if you look at this San Diego Legion team right now, what are your observations? What are kind of your strengths and weaknesses that you're seeing from the San Diego Legion team just 3 games into the season?
So they clearly have a lot of potential. Like you've gone over, they've got and really a ton of star players, and they didn't turn over a bunch of their squads. Sort of like New England, we saw both teams that were in the championship really stick with their core squad in. And turn over very little. And I think that's part of the issue for both teams is that the rest of the league has caught up. The rest of the league was making great moves in the offseason. And, you know, this is a league that's getting better and better every year. And if you're not improving in the offseason, then you're going backwards. And I think, you know, I think this squad looks a lot like it did last year, where it's got so much skill in the back lines. It's got, you know, so much potential for just explosive play, but then there's also a reasonable amount of disorganization at times. Sometimes they can, sort of like the Utah Warriors of old, they can sometimes let it get a little too silly out there, let things get away from them a bit. And so I think that really sets it up for Old Glory well, actually. And what I want to see from Old Glory this week is a return to how we beat New England, which is to focus on control and to, you know, focus on winning the kicking game, winning the position battle, focus on getting our defense set and not letting them really make a ton of ground, but encourage them to just keep smashing away. Focus on committing very few penalties, which is something that we've done pretty well this season, is, you know, keeping our discipline under control and letting them make the mistakes, and just having that patience that when an opportunity does arise, then we can jump on it and do our best to absolutely take advantage. But I think there's a lot to be said for a safer, more patient approach from us. We've got all the assets we need to win this game when those moments come up, although we do need to take advantage of them and not drop the ball, quite literally, like we're doing against Chicago. And Robertson needs to make his kicks, But, you know, we were creating opportunities against Chicago. We had the chances to score and to win that game, and to win that game quite easily if we'd taken those opportunities. So I'm not worried about us creating opportunities, and I'd rather we prevent the sort of sloppy play that can happen from time to time that creates opportunities for them. Because it's something that Simon Cross pointed out in my interview with him, that Chicago wasn't creating a ton of opportunities of their own. I mean, they were when they were a man up for 20 minutes, but other than that, they weren't creating that many opportunities for themselves, but there were times where we were creating opportunities for them. And I think if we want to play that sort of controlled style of play, if that's what we want our game plan to be, and which we were very successful against New England playing that game plan, I think we've got to focus on not giving away those free opportunities to the other team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bring up some excellent points here. I think part of what San Diego, you know, they did have some turnover, right? Like Will Hooley, he retired, fly half. Nate Osberger, he left. And they've had to shift things around in the back line, right? Gatto isn't here yet. So they've been, I don't think they really quite know who their starting fly half is, right? They've been using Lincoln McClutchy, a guy they brought in that I think people are really high on. They've had Marcel Brocky, who really is more of a center, but he played fullback against Los Angeles, right? So I don't think their back line has quite been settled the way they would have liked to, or maybe they anticipated it. And if you look at, you know, the games they've played, and if you look at, I think they haven't really been scoring very much, and they scored 68 points through three games. Well, you can say, well, Old Glory's only scored 63. Yeah, and that's true, but they also did not score any tries in week one and just had 6 points. So I think San Diego, you know, they may be struggling to score a little bit. Defensively, though, they've only given up 66 points, which is, it's just pretty good, which I think is right. If you look at this quickly, maybe fourth best in the league so far. Only Houston's only given up 46 points. Wow. That's interesting to take a look at. But I don't know if San Diego has had a test like Old Glory yet in terms of a back line with some explosive playmakers that Old Glory seems to be putting into place now. And I think that's going to really be a true test for San Diego, particularly with the forward pack and anticipating that everything will be fine with Chama. Our forward pack just controls this game, beats them up, batters them up. Like the scrums, we should be crushing it. The mauls have been playing, have been doing really well for us. Those rolling mauls, keep those going, please. And we've been, you know, their lineouts have been pretty solid. We've been winning, you know, the throws have been pretty solid. We've been stealing a couple. If we can continue to do that, I think this is a different story than the game that Old Glory played against San Diego last season when we came up short against them. AKP, quickly then, projected starters. And Danny, yay or nay, match day 23.
At this point, you've got to assume he won't be there. I mean, yeah. Okay. I think McVay has pretty much cemented himself as the starter, not necessarily forever, but certainly for now. You play the hot hand. He's done nothing to deserve getting to not have that role at the moment. You know, you know, maybe, you know, Danny, obviously it'd be great to have him back, but if the coaches are not going to be putting him in, then is this the match to start him? I, you know, at this point you've got to bet that he's probably not going to be there. I think in the back line, I sort of hope that John Powers has been good, been reliable in that back line. I think Willie T brings a little bit extra to the backs, and so I'd kind of like to see him starting, but I also don't mind him coming off the bench. You know, the real question will be in the back. I mean, obviously Axel Muller is going to be on one wing, but I wouldn't mind seeing Hoyland on the other wing. And then especially since, you know, San Diego's got Mikey Teo back there and he likes to kick the ball and put a ball in the air. I wouldn't mind Grady being back in the backfield to really win that kicking battle for us. And so I personally would put him back there. And then maybe if Perry Humphries is healthy, put him on the bench and ready to come in for whoever needs it in the back line.
Gotcha. Say Jama is suspended. Who slots in then at flanker? Or do you think things get moved around a little bit? Does Lautaro go to flanker? Do you throw? Yeah, or Colin?
I think what you probably have is Corey Daniel move to the six and Colin Gross come in and play seven as, you know, just based on the sort of size difference between those two guys.
Yeah.
I think you leave Lautaro Bavaro where he is. And I think you probably, you know, either Brady Daniel or I actually quite like Dakota Worth. I think he's been an underused player for Old Glory. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, stick one of those two on the bench. And I, you know, we've talked about the back row being an absolute area of strength for us. Nico Jones not available and not likely to be available for the near future.
Yeah.
We have plenty of options back there. I don't expect that to be a problem. I mean, Jama has been great this season, and it really would be a loss to see him suspended. I don't want to make it seem like we don't need him. Because just in terms, I mean, he brings a lot of leadership, but he's also just, I mean, he really is a top quality player.
Yep.
But then again, Colin Gross proved himself last season as being a pretty good player. So, you know, hopefully the drop-off isn't so massive there that we're we'd have a problem.
Real quickly, MLR put out their first 15. A couple other Oakland DC players made it, of course, Axel Muller as player of the week, but Corey Daniel joined in Jack Iskar as well. So congrats to those fellas for joining the MLR first 15
week. 20 tackles from Corey Daniel this week. He's getting back up there on the most number of tackles list.
Yeah, I love it. Love to see it. So, AKP, real quickly, give me your key to victory over San Diego. I know you touched on it a little bit, but what's the one thing you would want Old Glory to focus on in the San Diego match?
I think it's control. And I think it's all the little pieces that go into that. Patience in defense, patience in attack, you know, taking advantage when those opportunities come up, but not trying to forcibly create them. And, you know, controlling the kicking game and the territory game. And, you know, really sort of anaconda style, not letting, or boa constrictor, you know, suffocate San Diego and don't really let them have a chance to play with the ball and make something happen.
Just looking ahead for Saturday's game, something to think about the weather. It may be a rainy, cold, windy day, so not exactly conducive to running rugby. But I think we got to pick and choose our spots to get Axel, Damien, others in space. This may come down to Ford's game again, and we've seen Old Glory do that and do that well against New England in particular. So my key to this game is, and I said it last week, score early and score often. As you said, take control of the game, right? We're playing at home. Fortunately, couldn't get the W against Chicago, but score early, score often. Control the game. AKP, give me your score prediction for this one.
I'm going to say 20 to 17 in favor of Old Glory.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right on. I was going to go like 24-21 Old Glory. I think it's going to be a tight match. Like it's not going to be a game where, and obviously with Old Glory winning by 3, my prediction, a game that they just kind of pull away from, although I'd love to see it happen. I think it's going to kind of be close, but I think the strength of our pack, I think the strength of Robertson's kicking gives us the edge, and we get a result over San Diego. It'd be great if we could get 4 tries. I'd love that. I don't know if that's going to happen in this game. If that were the case, then I'd tick that up to maybe 28-21. We'll see. Old Glory winning by 3, somewhere in that mid-20 range. So, AKP, and that would be fantastic, right? Old Glory wins that one. You know, right now, Old Glory's just, we're in third place, a point ahead of Chicago, 3 back of NOLA Gold, and then 4 points back of New England. You know, there's a few table points to be had here. You know, we could find ourselves back in second place or sole possession of second. We'll see. A lot of things could happen.
Worth noting that both the teams that are above us in the table have played Anthem.
Right. Very excellent point. Very excellent point. Dallas dropped 68 on them, right?
Yeah.
So, their high scoring game of all time, I believe. All right. AKP, fun part here. We get to break down week 4, give our quick fire score predictions. We were talking off camera before this episode started recording. This really truly feels like a week where some of these results, you know, it could go in the middle in terms. It could go either way, and this will be interesting to pick. So, of course, anything that I pick, subject to change before I actually hit submit on Super Brew. But let's start with the first game of week 4, Seattle versus Houston. That's a Friday night game. I love Friday night games, even though it's a 10:30 Eastern time kickoff at Starfire Stadium. AKP, you go first. Who's winning this one? What's the score?
I think I'll take Seattle in this one. They're at home. I think Seattle's pulling ahead of the pack slightly. I think they're the first team to really show that there's a little bit of distance between them and the rest of the league. But it's early in the season. It's hard to say if that's real or if that's just illusionary. Houston also has 3 wins. They seem to be a bit ahead, but they've been a bit sloppy at times. I'm not totally convinced that they're at the top of the league yet. So I think it's going to be great, though. It's going to be a really close match. I don't think we haven't really seen Seattle until they beat Utah. We didn't really see them put anyone away too badly. So I think I'll take Seattle by 7 points or something.
I really want to go and pull for Houston in this one to win this game. I think they have a stronger forward pack. I think their style of play, you know, their game plan may be to go up to Seattle and try and bully them around. Seattle may be without Hadding. He did come off early in that week three contest. Seattle, man, week three, that was the first time we saw Duncan Matthews on the field at the same time as they grow wingers on trees up there. Jade Stalling has come in, has played really well. Tony Pulu has played well. You know, Inofuti, you know, he was tri-phenom last year. He's been kind of coming on slowly, but you know, the player that I really like, and I'm probably going to butcher his name, but the fullback, he also plays a little bit of center, he came over from Russia, Devon Rousseau, I think his name is. Rousseau, my Russian accent's terrible, but he's a good player. As Seattle, I think they've got a couple more weapons. I do like what Houston has. Davey Coetzer, great fly half. Varner, their scrum half now, they picked up, is playing great. Christian Dyer, I'm a big fan of him. This is going to be a back-and-forth match. I think Seattle wins this on a Mac Mason, you know, penalty in the last 10 seconds to seal it. Also, shout-out to my fantasy team that did lose. So I'm going to go with Seattle winning by three. Of course, we covered Old Glory DC versus the San Diego Legion. Miami Sharks versus Anthem. I'll go first here. Hey, KP, Anthem is playing better. They did get some points dropped on them by Dallas, and I think Dallas, I don't think they were in Dallas was necessarily trying to just run up the score. I think they were also, and I could be wrong on this, but you know, the players, they want to get in, they want to score, they want to play. And they also got to look at, you know, win, you know, try differential and, you know, scoring differential and all that stuff. The Miami Sharks, I think they're going to get their first, I think it's going to happen here. I think they get their first win in franchise history against the Anthem. It's not going to be a 68-28 blowout win. It's probably going to be tighter than that. But Miami, you know, they have some discipline issues, but they do have some interesting pieces there. I think Miami wins this one. It's probably going to be maybe smaller double digits, maybe 10, 11, 12. Miami win.
Yeah, I think this could be a closer game than Anthem has played so far, and I think they could have... They'll feel like they have a chance. It'll be close in the, 60th minute. But what we've seen from Anthem is that they... I mean, what happened against Dallas is they were close, and then Anthem ran out of steam. Their players were visibly tired. They didn't have the fitness to keep up with Dallas, and Dallas just, you know, boom, boom, boom. You know, three or four tries right at the end just to completely blow them away. And that... Mm-hmm. That's... I think that Miami will pull away late. It'll be a similar sort of story. Anthem will show some fire and show some competitiveness, but ultimately Miami is closer to being a complete side and a proper competitive side. And I think that shows, and they end up taking the win.
Got it. All right. This next one is, I think, going to be a really interesting one. Dallas Jackals at home, taking on NOLA Gold. This is Saturday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. NOLA Gold almost went up to Veterans Memorial Stadium and knocked off the New England Free Jacks. They were up 14-0 at one point. New England clawed back, didn't panic, ended up winning comfortably. I can't get a handle on this NOLA team, AKP. I don't know if they're good. I don't know if they're bad. They certainly beat Old Glory. I mean, they were up on New England. Dallas, on the other hand, to me, it seems like their loss so far, their only loss of the season has been to San Diego. They lost by 7. The score makes it seem like it was closer than it really was. I think San Diego was pretty much in control in that game. But yes, Dallas did play Anthem, and they didn't win that game, as to be expected. But I don't know, I feel like there's more excitement and optimism in Dallas right now than there has been in years past, for obvious reasons that, I don't know, I think people are kind of pulling for Dallas because it's exciting that they've been, you know, they've performed so poorly, I hate to say it, but it seems like they're really turning things around. And gosh darn it, if they're not, right now, third place in the Western Conference. They're playing at home. They got to be excited. I'm going to go with Dallas on this one for something. I just, one, selfishly, I hope Noel loses just to help Old Glory DC's case out, right? But I'm gonna go Dallas winning this one. It's probably close, maybe 3-4, 5-point win for Dallas, something like that.
Yeah, I think honestly, I think either this one sort of breaks for Dallas, and you know they've clearly got the fun running rugby style that can score a lot of points. If they can break down Nola's defense, then they'll score, you know, a million points in this one and really put Nola away. But if Nola's defense can hold, I think we've, you know, Dallas is, they've way improved this season, dramatically better. But I think they do suffer from some discipline issues. They're a little sloppy still at times. They've got great individual players, but I think there is, I'm going to take Nola by a small amount. I think Nola, and I think it'll be surprisingly low scoring. But if Dallas can do it, and they certainly have the potential to, I think that will go a long way to showing that they're sort of genuine contenders. They're a real competitive team this year.
You know, I'm going back and forth because the flip side of me wants to cheer for Nola simply because I'm tired of people saying how outside of New England, you know, the East is weak, which is garbage.
Oh, so, is that a storyline? Because yeah. That's ridiculous.
It's a storyline from certain folks up north. But anywho, so maybe I'll switch back and root for Nola in this one. But moving on, Chicago versus New England. A couple of juicy storylines here. One, this is Chicago's first home match of the 2024 MLR season. Two, this is New England's first trip back to SeatGeek Stadium where they won the MLR championship, beating the San Diego Legion. AKP, could this be, again, Chicago, not sure what's going on in the fly half there. You know, Luke Cardi, I don't know if he has just been playing well. He's been banged up a little bit. Billy Meeks is a great player, but he's not a natural 10, right? I feel like his strength is how he can play in the centers. Dominguez, I think, wasn't playing the last week, you know, against Old Glory DC. You know, he scored a try in week two. There's certainly pieces there. Is this the match where Chicago puts it all together and in front of a home crowd knocks off the defending MLR champions? I think that's a little bit of a reach. I think they've got...
I don't think it is. Not at all.
Oh, okay.
No,
so, I mean, so
okay, go yeah, for you it, go for it. It.
Yeah.
You finish your thought.
Well, this is a game that on paper, New England probably should win. But I don't know. I'm having second thoughts now. I'm like, okay, so here's my thing. I think New England wins this way. I think it's closer than expected. But I can be convinced on the other side. And AKP, please come in and enlighten me.
Yeah, so the Chicago has a few outstanding issues that they sort of need to figure out. And the biggest one is the fly half position. But they're not that far off. And as we saw, I mean, if you look at the last weekend, the match against Old Glory, and now admittedly Old Glory spent, you know, a quarter of the game down a man, but the stats were pretty much dead even in almost every category against Old Glory. And this is an Old Glory side that, you know, was dead even against New England. And in fact, I think you might see Chicago have an advantage in the forward play. I mean, their forwards pretty much on par with our forwards. Our forwards dominated against New England. So I think you could see New England struggle in the forward pack against Chicago. If the backs can play a good defensive game and contain, you know, the few explosive elements that Chicago has, or sorry, that New England has, you know, Reese McDonald and players like that, then I could see New England properly struggling in this game. And keep in mind that, you know, when we played New England, we weren't at full strength. We were leaving a lot open on the wings because we had a lot of young, inexperienced players back there. So I don't think it's a guarantee that Chicago wins. And I might even, you know, take New England as a slight favorite. But I think this is a pretty much coin flip game.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Awesome. Well, okay, AKP, closing out week four. RFC LA at home against the Utah Warriors. RFC LA looking for their first win. They're 0-3. They do have 3 table points. The Warriors 1-2. They have 6 table points. Will RFC, I'm just going to put it to you just straight, AKP, will RFC LA get their first win in MLR franchise history by knocking off the visiting Utah Warriors?
I mean, I think it's definitely possible. Again, sort of, they've played every team really, really close. They look nearly like a complete team. I think it's not a guarantee. Utah struggled quite a lot last weekend, but they've also, you know, they played Houston tight. They, I can't remember what their other match was, but they, you know, Utah's had
they beat Chicago.
They
beat Chicago.
You know, Utah's had some good results, and I do think they've got the opportunity to win that game, and I might favor Utah, especially coming off such a dramatic loss to Seattle, to potentially bounce back, but they've also got some injuries. So actually, yeah, I'm going to take RFCLA. I'm good, but I think it's close. I think 3 points.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. I think RFCLA's got a shot here at winning with you. So I'm going to jump into your camp and say the RFCLA, the Acorns, a.k.a. Matt McCarthy's head, the logo, gets their first win of the season there. And it's too bad because I don't like rooting against Utah because they are can be such a fun team to watch. AKP, I mean, that does it for week four in MLR. It's crazy how quickly we are really just kind of getting into the swing of things. Big match here against San Diego. We're certainly not in the must-win category yet, but a very, very much winnable game, and a game that I think All Glory DC should go into confidence with the expectation that they are going to win at home. So AKP, closing thoughts here. Playing devil's advocate here. How could things go sideways for All Glory?
Things go sideways if we engage in too much sort of sloppy, silly plays, sort of like Perry Humphreys batting the ball back for Boomer to scoop up and just score. Things like if we can't handle the kickoffs, if we're dropping balls all over the place, and they've got a lot of excellent stars in that back line. If we're not patient in our defense and we're not letting ourselves get settled in the defense and sort of playing our game on defense, they will break through and they will be able to score. And, you know, they've got, much like we saw against New England, where they were able to score some just ridiculous throw your hands up sort of scores. I think San Diego has that in them if we give them the opportunity to, and that's how I could see it getting away from us.
Got it. The operative word here is patience. Patience. Like that. So that's our closing word and thought for the day. Patience. For my co-host, Alistair Kirschpool, I am John Fitzpatrick. You've been listening to another episode of the Glorious Rugby Podcast. Tune in next week when we break down the San Diego game and we look to the Anthem RC game. But that's to come. Thank you for listening to the Glorious Rugby Podcast. I'll catch you next week.